Pleased to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to spend the 90 minutes today talking about a couple of different health issues. To begin with, we're visiting with you about something called diabetic retinopathy. Our guest, Dr. Michael Ipp, Associate Professor of Medical Science at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. He practices at the UW Fundus Photo Reading Center. It's located at Science Drive, has over 50 clinical trials going on to study retinal eye diseases related to macular degeneration, to diabetes, to hypertension, and AIDS. We're zeroing in a bit today on diabetic retinopathy. So we hope you'll join in with if you have some questions or comments for us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Dr. Michael Ipp, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry. Very glad to be here.
Tell us a little about the Fundus Photo Reading Center.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we have a large number of clinical trials set up at the University of Wisconsin Fundus Photograph Reading Center. And as you said, I have a research interest at that institution there. And clinically, I see patients at the University of Wisconsin clinic over at University Avenue. But I've been on the show in the past, and Larry, we've spoken about a number of the diseases that we study there and the types of patients that we see commonly in the clinic. And we've talked about age-related macular degeneration in the past, and we've also talked about something called retinal vein occlusion in the past. And those are some very common retinal diseases that we see both in the clinic and that we research at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center. And today the topic is diabetic retinopathy. Diabetic retinopathy is an extremely common condition that we see clinically, and it's a condition that we study extensively at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center with a large number of the clinical trials that you mentioned focused specifically on the study of diabetic retinopathy.
Well, now, how does diabetes lead to this diabetic retinopathy?
Yeah, well, as you know, diabetes is a systemic disease that is caused by an issue with insulin, either a secretion of insulin or the receptors interfacing with the insulin molecule. And what happens is patients become hyperglycemic. They have high blood sugars, and over time, you get microvascular and macrovascular damage to different end organs in the body. So the microvascular or small vessel disease that we typically see involves either diabetic foot ulcers, or you can get kidney problems, or what I see very commonly is problems with the small blood vessels in the eye, specifically those in the retina. And it's a very common condition. To give you some perspective of this, the most recent estimates show that there are about 18 million people in the United States that are affected by diabetes. About half of those people have diabetic retinopathy at a given time. And if you want to look locally here in Wisconsin, the latest estimates show that we have about 400,000 to 500,000 people who have diabetes, and about half of those people at any given time actually have diabetic retinopathy. So, you know, by those estimates, you're talking about 200,000 to 250,000 people in Wisconsin alone who suffer from diabetic retinopathy.
That's and does this lead to blindness? Does it always lead to blindness? Or?
Well, you can define blindness in several different terms. You know, one sense is, does a patient have visual dysfunction? And that, to a specific patient, might actually be blindness if it prevents them from doing their job. There's a legal definition of blindness, which is worse than 20/200, and then there's absolute blindness when a patient can't see anything at all. So with that in mind, keeping those definitions in mind, I would say that many people do have a significant visual impairment who actually develop diabetic retinopathy. Mm.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you'd like to visit, have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Are all persons with diabetes, the type 1 and 2, at risk for developing this?
Yes, Larry. There's two different types of several different types of diabetes mellitus. Patients can have a type 1 diabetes or a type 2. Type 1 typically tends to happen in younger people who require insulin, and type 2 is much more common, happening in an older age population. These people may or may not need insulin. Sometimes they can be controlled with oral hypoglycemic agents. And yes, the answer to that is both type 1 patients with both type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes can be affected by diabetic retinopathy. Mm.
And are the symptoms of diabetic retinopathy fairly apparent? I mean, you start losing your sight.
That's a very pertinent question, whether or not diabetic retinopathy is symptomatic or not. And the key thing to remember is that you can have diabetic retinopathy and be completely asymptomatic. In other words, you do not know you have diabetic retinopathy. And this is an important point because that highlights to people who have diabetes or who are at risk for having diabetes to make sure that they have at least an annual eye examination to screen for diabetic retinopathy. Because, again, you might actually have diabetic retinopathy and not know it. And the sooner you have a screening evaluation, the sooner your physicians know that you have diabetic retinopathy, the better your outcomes are going to be. I always tell my patients that by the time you get in, and if you have visual loss from diabetes, it's almost too late. We want to see you before you have visual loss, because we're actually pretty good at preventing loss of vision. Sometimes we're not so good at getting vision back once it's already been lost.
No. Well, we have Doug in Traverse City, Michigan online, so let's go to Doug. Doug, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, I hope my question pertains to your program. I've been diagnosed with a microaneurysm, which is in the back of the eye, and which has been described to me as a kink in the blood vessel or something, and you get some leakage that my body is not absorbing, so therefore it shows up in my vision. On that eye, which is to see it, to read or something, shows up as a smudge mark, sort of.
Yep.
And so even during the daylight hours and stuff, it affects my good eye, of course. And I'm just wondering if I'm actually scheduled for a steroid, or they inject the steroid, like
yep.
in back
yep.
of the eye, to take care of that. I'm not really sure. If you could just give me some information on this, if you know anything about it, could help me
yeah,
out.
Yeah, sure. Well, a microaneurysm is a finding that is consistent with diabetic retinopathy, and as the term implies, micro meaning small, we typically see microaneurysms in diabetic retinopathy. Now, what you sound to be describing, it sounds like you're describing something called a macro aneurysm, which is not related to diabetic retinopathy. It's typically a large dilation in one of the small arterioles in the retina. I'm assuming you don't have diabetes just from this.
No.
Just from this description here, you don't have diabetes. So what you have is an isolated finding called a macro aneurysm. And as the term would suggest, macro meaning large, it's a large aneurysm in one of the small arterioles in your eye and has nothing to do with diabetic retinopathy. It does have a lot to do with systemic hypertension. It's more commonly seen in patients who have systemic hypertension. So in addition to getting your eye treated with, there's a variety of different treatments, and one of them perhaps is an intravitreal injection of steroid in your eye. It sounds like that's the way you're going. But I would also urge you to make sure that you manage this as well with your internist, and make sure that if you're at risk for hypertension or if you have hypertension, and make sure that you get that under control.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Doug. Appreciate it. Dr. Michael Ipp, our guest today, Associate Professor of Medical Science at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center, talking with him today about diabetic retinopathy. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Dr. Ipp, you mentioned that you can control it's a lot easier to prevent vision loss than it is to, bring it back once it's gone. And I'm assuming that there are some stages and there are some stages of diabetic retinopathy that a person goes through.
Right. That's correct, Larry. And, you know, this will get back to the sort of this dual role here with research and clinical work. In research, we actually have the levels of diabetic retinopathy broken down into many different steps. I think it's almost up to 15, 20 different levels of diabetic retinopathy, very specific so that we can actually gauge how well an intervention such as a pharmacologic intervention will actually help stabilize or prevent the progression of diabetic retinopathy. From a clinical standpoint, we essentially just simplify this whole staging system and we grade it sort of as a mild, moderate, severe, and proliferative diabetic retinopathy. So we will actually see a patient, we'll assess what stage or what level they're actually at, whether it's mild or moderate or severe, and then the final step, which is what we call proliferative diabetic retinopathy, where the patient starts to get new and abnormal blood vessels in the eye, and they are at high risk for developing severe vision loss from retinal detachment, from vitreous hemorrhage, and other problems in the eye from diabetic retinopathy. So we can actually take a look at a patient and assess what level of retinopathy that they're at based on how many microaneurysms we actually see in the eye that we can visualize on our examination. There are also signs that we look at, such as focal areas of what we call ischemia, where the retina has these little yellow spots on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can also assess and see how dilated some of the veins are in the back of the eye. And based on what we look at in an individual's eye, we can actually tell what might be the risk of this patient to have vision loss, let's say in the next 6 months, or let's say in the next year. So based on that, we're able to institute a follow-up regimen with the patient. So patients, for example, who have mild diabetes, we may just say, well, you're not at a high risk for developing vision loss. Just come back in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we look at a patient, even if they're asymptomatic, and again, this highlights the importance of seeing an eye doctor to assess your level of retinopathy. So some patients will come in and they'll have severe diabetic retinopathy and be completely asymptomatic. Sometimes we'll tell the patient, well, you don't need treatment now. Just come back, not in a year, but come back in 3 months so we can have a closer follow-up on you. Or in some instances, some patients who will be completely asymptomatic and will have 20/20 vision in both eyes, they will have a lesion in the back of the eye from diabetic retinopathy, which we will say, yes, we need to treat that now. The reason for treating that now is to keep you at an asymptomatic state to prevent you from developing some vision loss.
Okay. Now, I've got an appointment with to have my eyes examined at UW on the end of December.
Good for you, Larry. You're practicing what you preach here.
I'm wondering, normally when you have an eye exam, is the doctor looking for diabetic retinopathy, or is that...
Yes, I would say typically when you see an eye care professional, whether or not it's an ophthalmologist or an optometrist in the state of Wisconsin, everybody's highly aware of what I would call the burden of diabetic retinopathy, the epidemic of diabetic retinopathy in this state and across the country and actually across the world at this point because of dietary habits that are spreading worldwide. But it's a very common condition. We all know that it's the most common cause of vision loss in the working age population, people under the age of 55, under the age of 60. So it's very common. And just about any eye care professional in this state is going to understand, knows about that, and will actually screen and evaluate a patient for diabetic retinopathy as part of a routine eye examination. And you'll have to know as a patient that the best way to get screened for that is to make sure you get a dilated examination.
Dr. Michael Ipp, our guest today, as we talk with him about diabetic retinopathy. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dr. Michael Ipp, Associate Professor of Medical Sciences at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. He practices at the UW Fundus Photo Reading Center. It's located on Science Drive in Madison. Really pleased to have him with us today as we talk about diabetic retinopathy. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Martina in Madison is online, so let's go to Martina. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a question in regards to, I know it was on the news a while ago that the erectile dysfunction drugs like Cialis and Levitra and Viagra caused some sort of ischemic blindness, and I was wondering if that was in any way related to diabetic blindness, because, you know, a lot of people who have diabetes also have erectile dysfunction, and I don't know, it kind of got hazy, so I was wondering if you could comment on that, and I will take the comments off the air. Thank you.
All right, thank you for calling.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there is a link between ED and diabetes mellitus, the type of vision loss that you're referring to from these ED drugs is unrelated to diabetic retinopathy. These ED drugs have a direct effect on photochemical transduction in the retina, and there have been some reports of patients losing some vision, uncommonly, but patients losing some vision temporarily while they're on the ED drugs. But this is by a completely different mechanism than that of diabetic retinopathy. So there's no specific relation between these ED drugs and diabetic retinopathy, other than the fact that, as you mentioned, ED is a little more common in the diabetic population.
Let's talk a little bit more about diagnosing or maybe self-diagnosis. You said at one point that there's you can have diabetic retinopathy and not even realize you have it. Are there some symptoms? I assume it's just vision loss.
That's correct, Larry. Diabetic retinopathy generally does not cause pain. If it becomes symptomatic, what the patient will notice is a loss of vision. They typically will have blurry vision in their central visual field. They'll come in and have difficulty reading, or say that they have difficulty seeing small print on distant road signs, That's typically due to something called diabetic macular edema, which is swelling in the retina because the small vessels around the center of the retina, which we call the fovea or the macula, these small vessels start to leak fluid from the vascular spaces. The fluid then leaks into the retina. The retina then soaks up the fluid, much like a sponge would soak up water. And when the retina gets thick and soggy like that, a patient will have blurry central visual acuity. And that's typically the most common symptom that a patient will have from diabetic retinopathy. Another reason why patients can lose vision from diabetic retinopathy is not macular edema. Another cause is neovascularization, what we call proliferative diabetic retinopathy. And this is a situation when a patient starts to develop new and abnormal blood vessels on the surface of the retina. These new and abnormal blood vessels form because the diabetic retina is very what we call ischemic. It's starved of oxygen. It's not getting a lot of oxygen because of the microvascular disease that diabetes causes. And because of the ischemia or lack of oxygen, what the retina says, you think of it this way, the retina says, well, I need more blood flow. I need a more of a blood supply. And what the retina tries to do is it tries to make new blood vessels to supply it oxygen. And it actually does that. These new blood vessels then form on the surface of the retina. But the problem with these new blood vessels are they're completely abnormal. These blood vessels are very prone to breaking and bleeding into the eye. And when those blood vessels bleed into the eye, patients experience a shower of floaters, very hazy vision, and in some very severe cases, the entire vitreous cavity of the eye can fill up with blood, and a patient can have severe vision loss. So that's another mechanism whereby patients can lose vision, and that's yet another symptom of diabetic retinopathy.
Mm. Does diabetes, by the way, just offhand, does it lead to other types of eye diseases?
Yeah, diabetes can be associated with other eye diseases other than just diabetic retinopathy. Patients who have diabetes mellitus also have a higher chance of developing cataract. It's also associated with one of the other diseases that we had spoken about, Larry, on a different show, that of retinal vein occlusion. Diabetes is also associated with glaucoma as well. So it is seen in association with other eye diseases as well.
Ralph in Genoa City will turn to you next. Hi, Ralph. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I have glaucoma. I've had it for about 40 years. I have my eyes tested two to three times a year. Now I hear a lot of commercials about vitamins, and the miraculous effects of them. Can you possibly comment on what vitamins do or don't do to the eyes? And I will hang up and listen to you on the air if you don't mind.
All right.
Yeah. That's a good question. I wish we had more definitive information for you regarding vitamin supplementation and diabetic retinopathy. There's a lot of evidence to show that certain vitamin supplements can actually indeed help with eye diseases. And perhaps Larry we can do another show on this one specifically. But when it comes to, for example, age-related macular degeneration and the prevention of wet age-related macular degeneration, there was an excellent study, a very well-done study done by the National Institutes of Health that have shown that a vitamin supplement can actually definitively reduce the risk of a patient from going from dry to wet age-related macular degeneration. Larry, by the way, this is one of the studies that we've participated in both at the clinic here. So thank you to all the patients out here who helped us with that. As well as we researched at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center. But that particular study showed that vitamin supplementation can help age-related macular degeneration. So there is some precedent to show that nutritional supplementation can help with reducing the progression of a retinal disease. So it's hard to extrapolate that to diabetic retinopathy. I don't think we really can do that, but it shows proof of concept that we can take nutritional supplements and prevent the progression of a retinal disease. Now, for your specific question, is there any evidence or any proof that a vitamin supplement can help repair the damage from diabetic retinopathy or prevent the progression of diabetic retinopathy? The answer is, at this point, we don't have the answer to that. So I don't have any specific information to tell you about that. Essentially, as you know, lifestyle changes, we all know, can help with the progression of diabetic retinopathy. So it probably is a good segue to just mentioning this fact, lifestyle changes can help, whether you have diabetic retinopathy or you just have diabetes or you think you're just at risk for developing diabetes. We all know that keeping a low body mass index, losing weight can help prevent you getting diabetes and may even help prevent the progression of diabetes once you get it. We do know that keeping a low glycosylated hemoglobin and maintaining your blood pressure down if you have systemic hypertension are very good modifiable risk factors to evaluate in your lifestyle. We know that those two, in addition to stopping smoking, have a very beneficial effect on diabetic retinopathy. Additionally, you want to do things like making sure you exercise 30 minutes a day, even moderately, making sure that your triglycerides are less than 150, making sure that you keep your bad cholesterol, the LDLs, down lower than 100, and trying to get your good cholesterols, your HDLs, up at least up at the 40 or above for men and more than 50 for women. So these are all things that we can do to look at in terms of modifiable risk factors to help prevent you from developing diabetic retinopathy or even help you prevent getting diabetes to begin with if you're at risk.
Yeah. Duane in Platteville, give you a chance. Now, hi, Duane. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question regarding I actually have retinopathy, and I've had some multiple surgeries on my eyes already. And I have a question regarding switching doctors. How important is it to stick with the doctor you have, or is it not all that important? I mean, can you readily transfer to a different doctor?
It's a good question, but I think at the same time, it's also a very highly personalized a type of question. I think that it has to do with, your level of comfort with your doctor and, in terms of how he talks to you. Is he answering your questions? Technically, the technical skill of the doctor is certainly much harder for a patient to figure out. But certainly if you're comfortable with your doctor in terms of how he relates to you as a person, that's excellent. If you're not comfortable with that, then certainly I would say then, it's probably time to seek someone that you feel like you're comfortable with, you can ask questions to, and, hope that your doctor is listening. In terms of technical skills, as I mentioned, it's very hard for anybody to to assess that as a patient. And I think most doctors would probably agree with this, that you know, seeking a second opinion, if that's what the patient wants to do, I think most doctors are very very open to that. I think most doctors want the patient to feel comfortable that they're getting good care and they're getting good explanation. So, you know, in the end, you may wind up just getting a second opinion and coming back to your original doctor. But if that makes you feel better, then I think that that was probably a worthwhile thing to do.
My dilemma comes from the fact that each time you have one of these laser procedures to eliminate some of those extra blood vessels that you were talking about,
yeah,
you do lose some of your sight as well, it seems.
That's somewhat correct. When you have abnormal blood vessels in the eye, as I just talked about, which is a response to the ischemia in the retina, one of the treatments is what we call panretinal photocoagulation. In other words, what the doctor will then do is to take a laser and ablate what we call the peripheral retina. In other words, I always describe this to the patients as the following, which is we're trying to save your central vision. And in order to save your central vision, we have to sacrifice some of the peripheral retina. And we sacrifice it by applying this laser treatment. So in a sense, dead retina out in the periphery, dead retina being dead from the laser, is better than dying retina, which is retina that's ischemic and starved of oxygen and is trying to make all those blood vessels. So that's what I tell the patients in terms, that's what the sacrifice is. We're trying to kill off that retina in the periphery that's starving of oxygen in order to save the central vision. Now, this is an extremely effective treatment. It's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt in a number of clinical trials that it's a very effective treatment for proliferative diabetic retinopathy. Now, is it a perfect treatment? No. Just with any other treatment, there are no perfect treatments. And as you mentioned, in some patients, there can be some side effects. The side effects of this treatment might include what we call dyschromatopsia, or a problem with color vision. Some patients will actually lose one or two lines of their central visual acuity. Some patients can also lose some peripheral visual field, as you can imagine, because we're actually destroying or sacrificing some of the peripheral retina. So some patients can experience some side effects from this type of treatment, but we know by and large that if left untreated, proliferative diabetic retinopathy will almost certainly lead to severe vision loss. So even though you're noticing some side effects from the treatment, most likely you're better off getting that treatment because if you don't get it, you'll probably lose even more vision than you're losing as a side effect from the laser.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment. Is that the standard treatment for that condition?
For that level of retinopathy, Larry, as we mentioned, it goes through several stages, and the level that I was just speaking with to the last caller about is proliferative diabetic retinopathy. And once a patient starts getting blood vessels like that, that is a very standard treatment, and it's because it's so effective, and it's also withstood the test of time. It's been a treatment that's been around now for over 20 years. It's really more than that. Yeah, it's really withstood the test of time. It's relatively easy to apply. It's relatively well tolerated by patients, and it really prevents a very bad complication, that of the vitreous hemorrhage that I was talking to you about. So it is quite a standard treatment. Yes,
I just envisioning it, so to speak. I've always said, you know, like most people, I think if somebody puts something close to your eye, you're going to blink. And I'm trying to envision how this is actually given to the patient.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the eye treatments that we give to patients, it does create a lot of anxiety. You know, a lot of the patients say, I don't want anything near my eye, and I can't imagine anything coming close to my eye. And that's true. I do have to say that by and large, when patients are faced with eye, you know, losing vision, it's a frightening thing. And, you know, you do what you have to do. But by and large, the eye treatments aren't as bad as they seem. I think a lot of the times, it's more of the fear of the unknown, more of the fear of what might happen. And once a patient actually has one of these eye treatments, for example, the laser treatment, and a lot of patients have to receive multiple treatments, the first one is scary because you don't know what to expect. And then once you go through the first one and know, you know, you've gone through it and you see that it's not that terrible of an ordeal, the second, third time that you may need a laser treatment, the anxiety level is a lot lower.
Lower. And apparently then it's not particularly painful while it's happening.
Sometimes it can be. For example, when we're doing the laser treatment, there are different parts of the retina that have different innervation, and certain small areas of the retina can be more sensitive than others when we're applying the laser treatment. So some patients can have some mild discomfort during certain phases of the laser procedure, and we try to mitigate that by giving patients some Tylenol, for example, before the procedure.
Okay, let's go to Sheila in Madison next. Sheila, hello to you.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
I apologize if it's a duplicate question, but I was curious. If you're a newly diagnosed diabetic and you keep your blood sugars fairly well controlled, what's the likelihood or, how long would it take for that to for diabetic retinopathy to kind of come on, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a good question. Couple of ways to approach that question. One very famous study that was actually done right here in Wisconsin, looking at patients from the Beaver Dam Eye Study, showed that if you have diabetes for 20 or more years, you're almost certain to have some level of diabetic retinopathy. So you're going to get it if you have it long enough. That being said, if you go on for the rest of your life with just mild non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, in other words, where you just have some microaneurysms, or when the doctor looks in the eye, they see some of these small spots in the eye, and if you're asymptomatic, it's not going to be a problem for you. It's only when you start to get the macular edema or you start to get the proliferative complications of those new blood vessels will you start to lose vision, and then it will become a problem for you. What we do know then is that to try to prevent you from progressing along that scale of diabetic retinopathy, in other words, you're going to get some diabetic retinopathy if you live long enough. The question is, we want to stop the progression of the disease so that it doesn't actually affect your vision. And it goes back to what I was saying before, which is that we have a lot of very good evidence to show that for a patient like yourself, you've just gotten the diagnosis of diabetes, and you're saying, what can I do to prevent the progression of this, or what can I do to prevent having vision loss? And as I mentioned, all those modifiable risk factors, again, you know, keeping your blood sugars low, making sure you get your glycosylated hemoglobin checked on a frequent basis, trying to keep it less than 7. I know that's very difficult. I mean, I have patients who come in, they have 11 or 12. It's not very common, but I do have patients that have glycosylated hemoglobins at that level. But you got to keep it low. You've got to make sure that you control your blood pressure. You've got to make sure and get that checked and make sure that your cholesterol and triglycerides are down. You get exercise and make sure that, you know, you keep an ideal body mass index. So you do all that, and that's essentially the best you can do. And also make sure that you get an annual eye examination even if you're asymptomatic.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Dorothy, I believe, is calling from her home in Florida. Dorothy, hi.
Hi, good morning, Larry. Actually, my husband is Dan from Presque Isle.
Oh.
He's talked to you before. I have a question for the doctor. He's been diagnosed with idiopathic polypoid keratopathy, and we've gone through several treatments of the Macugen. We've had the Avastin. We've had the PDT therapy. And I was just wondering if what the doctor has to say about this, and with the way he's describing the retinopathy, that also sounds like so much of what he has gone through. I'd be happy to take my answer off the air.
Yeah, it sounds as if the entity is idiopathic polypoidal choroidal vasculopathy, and it's unrelated to diabetic retinopathy. It's actually a form of age-related macular degeneration. It typically tends to happen in persons 50, 60 years or older. And it's unrelated to diabetic retinopathy. The reason why you get that disease is very different than diabetic retinopathy. It has nothing to do with high blood sugar. It's essentially a disease that people get as you age, and the treatment is also very different. So he might be looking at injections of steroids. He may be looking at something called photodynamic therapy, types of laser treatments. So it's a very different condition, and it's very difficult to comment on that without actually knowing some further details about your husband. But thank you for that call.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate the call. I'm wondering if there is more information out there, I'm sure, and I want, before we go away, I want to make sure that people have some places where they can go for more information.
Yeah, sure. There are websites that you can check for some information, and probably one of the better places to check is the American Diabetes Association website. They can give you some more information on diabetes and some links for information on diabetes. And certainly, the American Academy of Ophthalmology has a section for patients, which will give you screening recommendations and other links for other information. And again, Larry, it's a very common disease, very debilitating, and happens in a working age population. And as I mentioned, unfortunately, it's becoming more and more of a problem, not only in Wisconsin but across the United States. And hopefully, in future shows, we'll be able to give you some information coming out from some of the research that we're doing at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center.
And by the way, does the Fundus Photo Reading Center have a website as well?
Yes, we do. I don't have it offhand right now with me. You can probably link to it from one of the UW websites.
Yeah, I would think if you just go into the type in Fundus, FUNDUS Photo Reading Center, you're probably in a search engine. You're probably going to come up with.
Yep. Yeah. Google Fundus Photograph Reading Center. I'm sure it'll be one of the first ones up there.
Dr. Ipp, thank you so much. Look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Dr. Michael Ipp is an associate professor of medical science at the UW Madison Clinical Sciences Center, and he practices at the UW Fundus Photo Reading Center. Really pleased to have him with us. It's located on Science Drive in Madison, and they have over 50 clinical trials going on to study retinal eye diseases relating to macular degeneration, to diabetes, to hypertension, and even to AIDS. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the two leading causes of lung cancer, both smoking and radon, with our two guests coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.